Hello, I'm Alex Ewing, and welcome to Out of the League.
It's been another busy week in the conference, as this week we round up the Skrill Premier, North and South. In the Skrill Premier, Cambridge returned to the top of the league, Nuneaton kept up their unbeaten start, and Barnet are the third and final team yet to be defeated this season. Starting off in the Skrill Premier, Cambridge United returned to the top of the league with a convincing 3-0 win at home to Tamworth. It was in-form midfielder Luke Berry grabbing a brace for the home side, which proved pivotal for the result. Nuneaton kept up their unbeaten start with a very impressive 2-1 away victory at Grimsby. Nuneaton, who were tipped by many to struggle this season, have been in scintillating form so far, and after a convincing win against pre-season favourites Grimsby, they've really shown how they have developed a great young side and really are going to be hoping to stay clear of the relegation zone come the end of the season. Barnet have dropped down to second and are the third and final team to remain unbeaten so far this season, and had to rely on a goal coming from Harry Crawford 6 minutes from the end of time to get 3 points over an improving Hyde side. The two games of the weekend, though, in my opinion, were Kidderminster v Luton and Wrexham v Chester. Luton, who have been on a run of 3 draws in their last 3 games, finally returned to winning ways with an impressive 2-0 away victory at Kidderminster. John Steele there proving any doubters that his side really are still able to cut the mustard and really will be challenging for the league or the playoffs come the end of the season. Chester, who were of course pointless before Saturday, got their first and most important win of the season against their arch rivals Wrexham. Wrexham, who of course have been on a dreadful run of late, were unable to stop the rot, and we caught up with Mark Griffiths from Wrexham Supporters to talk about it all.
As we talked about last week in our podcast, it was a bit of a diabolical bank holiday weekend for Wrexham. First of all, what was your take on the decision at Hyde, the penalty? Was it really as bad as Andy Morrell made it out to be?
I don't like knocking refs, but yeah, the first one was. Ormrod's walking the ball out for a goal kick, and he got legged over, essentially, and the two players went down in a heap. But it's one of those rare occasions when I'm doing the commentaries in the games, and sometimes afterwards you stop and take a step back and think, oh, you know, was I getting carried away there? You look at the video afterwards and think, yeah, maybe there's two sides to this. This is one of the rare occasions this where I looked at the video afterwards and thought that was even more of a bad decision than I thought at the time. You know, it was a strange one, very strange one.
And as everyone knows, the bank holiday weekend really only went from bad to worse for Wrexham with the performance against Lincoln. Andy Morrell said it was the worst performance under his tenure. Is that true, or is he just clearly frustrated by everything that's going on at the moment?
To be honest with you, he's a pretty level-headed guy, and again, it sounds like hyperbole, but probably right. I mean, we've been spoiled almost, really, how well we've been doing in the last couple of years, and it was a real empty performance the first half hour or so. I mean, the way our season's gone, we were letting in 2 goals every game. The first half hour at Lincoln, we were flat, and they were on top of it and had possession. But our defence actually looked quite solid, and I was sitting there thinking, okay, nice sunny bank holiday, both sides are looking a little sluggish, and if we have a nice solid game and just draw 0-0, I'd be delighted, because that's what we've been sort of lacking this season. But once Stephen Wright went off injured, the defence suddenly looked very shaky. 2 minutes later, we'd let a goal in, and we couldn't raise ourselves. And from it being a sort of torpid, you know, hopefully 0-0 match, we'd walk away and say, good result against one of the best, well, certainly the best team we played this season.
Yeah.
Instead, it just fell apart. And once we went behind, there was no way we were getting back into it, to be honest with you.
So what is happening at Wrexham this season? On Twitter yesterday, I think it was Martin Riley, who's obviously now left Wrexham, vented his frustration with what's happening at the club. I'm sure that's the same with many fans. Are they starting to go through a bit of a dip and unable to really keep up the high level of form that they've been able to produce these last few seasons?
I think very, very feasibly so. I think there's good reasons for it. I understand where Riley was coming from, but I think really what's happening is a hangover from what happened before Morrell came in, really. I'm not blaming Dean Saunders for spending an awful lot of money, but you know, because a manager is going to do that, isn't he? Any manager is going to say to the board, give me more, give me more. that's totally fair enough. The board at the time really overindulged that massively. Now, I'm not going to get into a debate about the whys and wherefores and their motivation for that, because that could get us both into a bit of trouble. But they really did push the boat out. Under the previous regime, our wage bill was enormous. And I think to an extent, our success over the last couple of years has partly been because of that overindulgence. I think the trust has come in, and although people complain about the budgets, I think this is reality kicking in. The last couple of years, we've had to work more to a budget and actually be realistic. And that's inevitably meant that players like Riley, for instance, like Chris Westwood last season, had to be made offers one would assume which are not as good as their previous contracts, because we're having to cut our cloth according to our means. And I think this is an inevitable slight retraction. There's still a decent amount of quality in the squad, and I look at it and I think it could gel.
Yeah.
But having said that, it's thinner. It's a much thinner squad. You know, we're throwing the young lads in, and they look good actually. They look ready.
Well,
but there's a lot less quality, and certainly at the back. I mean, never mind the old cliche, does the manager know what his best back four is? I certainly can't work out what our best back four is. We've got Crichton, who we don't really know how fit he'll be. We've got Wright, who I like enormously, and when he's fit, he's got to be in there. But the fact of the matter is that his history is that he's never managed to put in many games over quite a number of years because of his persistent injury problems, and he's broken down again. You know, it's difficult to work out what our strongest back four is, unless you factor in players who you know probably won't be able to give you many games this season. So it's got to gel, and there's potential to do that. But I mean, the other factor, and I know we're horrible against Chester, is we're missing Dean Keats, we're missing Jay Harris. You take two players of that quality out of our midfield, and even though our midfield's got depth, they're still our two key midfielders.
Yeah.
And that hurts.
Well, as you just say, you've brought it on nicely to Chester. That must have hurt.
I shouldn't have brought it on to that. You know, what really bothered me was, I always feel the worst time to play a team is when they just got hammered.
Yeah.
You know, because they're going to have a week of the manager on their back, and they're going to be determined to put it right.
Sure.
And after the Lincoln game, I thought, well, maybe Chester's a nice game to have, because we'll be really pumped up for it, and we'll go hit the ground running. And instead, the first half hour particularly was at least the same as Lincoln, if not worse.
Yeah.
And Chester, all credit to them, certainly were much better than their results suggest. And then, you know, maybe there's a suggestion that they've had a tough fixture list, to be fair, at the start of the season. They played a lot of decent teams, whereas we've played one, really.
Yeah.
And they came out, they looked like they were playing a derby first half hour. They got in about us. I mean, early goals don't hurt, obviously, but nonetheless, they merited their lead. And then I think they did tire a little.
What comes with being a part-time team as well, I think that.
Say again?
I think that comes with being a part-time team, doesn't it? Certainly against teams like Wrexham.
They handled it beautifully.
Yeah.
Because they changed their shape at half-time. They made the substitution at half-time. They drew back on themselves a bit. And instead, they were playing like a diamond in midfield and got at us. Instead, they flattened it out to a 4-4-2. Two banks of four, and they dug in. And the second half, we had all the possession, all the territory, never looked like scoring because they were organised and they repelled us, and we didn't have that little spark. So I've got to say, huge credit to Chester, who I think played it absolutely beautifully. But the fact is that we didn't really turn up until it was too late.
So is there a lot of pressure now, would you say, on Andy Morrell? If this form continues, is he going to keep his job?
I hope that people remember what he's achieved.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but there's already some people calling for his head. I can't subscribe to that at all. But you never know how a board's going to react, you know, how much they pay attention to outside opinion. He's equaled his longest run without a win, 5 games, although to be fair, that does show, like I said, just how spoiled he'd been the last 2 years, doesn't it, really? That's not really a crisis.
No.
But I mean, I'd be horrified. He's a smart guy. He's working with injuries and a budget which has reduced his squad. And I'm a little concerned at the historical reaction that some people are. I mean, a lot of people aren't. A lot of people really are dismissing this. That on Red Passion, the Wrexham message board, there's often sarcastic threads called Morrell out just to mock the people who seem to jump onto that every time. You know, so I mean, I think it would be absolute lunacy to, you know, to have such a dramatic reaction to things. But obviously, I mean, you never can tell. I suppose I'd be horrified if they did that. For my eyes, he's a long way off. He's got a lot of credit in the bank, I would argue, for what he's achieved over the last couple of years, because he did well to build on what Saunders did.
So if he does stay, where can you hope to finish come the end of the season? Is it the season too young to really be able to say, actually, maybe playoffs are going to be unrealistic this year? Or do you still think you've got every chance with the squad you have to really push on for the playoff places?
I'm going to be a coward and jump on that and say I don't want to commit myself. I mean, I keep trying to say to people, I keep throwing out lots of historical examples of how you can turn a season around. Not necessarily saying that I really believe it's going to happen. You know, Kidderminster and Mansfield last year.
I was about to say that.
I mean, to be honest, the three promotion campaigns I've seen Wrexham put together, we've started worse each time. I remember us going up under Dennis Smith in 2003. We started off horribly and letting five goals at home to Rochdale, one of our first home games. And the famous year in Wrexham's history is 77-78. You win the third division, we go in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup and the League Cup, and we win the Welsh Cup. And that's just the high point of our existence.
Yeah.
But if you look at the results, until something like early October, we were down near relegation and then kicked on. So it's early days. I don't know if you've seen, but today I'm not 100% this is right, because this transfer deadline day, and I've only just got in for work and I've had a quick look on the internet. It appears we've sold Bradley Reid, our young striker, to Wolves.
I saw that he was heavily linked, but I didn't see that it had officially gone through. So that is very interesting.
It looks like he has, and the speculation seems to be 200,000 plus loaned back for some part of this season. Now, you know, if that is the case, then Morel might now have he's been talking for a while about having more room in his budget, just in terms of getting people out of the squad so he can loan people in, just in terms of wages. But if he's actually got more room in his budget because cash has come in too, then maybe a couple of judicious signings. I think Dave Artell, who was with the squad at the end of last season, has been talked about an awful lot, and they need someone authoritative at the back.
Yeah.
So a couple of judicious additions, Keats getting back to fitness, could make a difference.
Finally, we've had many requests from a lot of you asking why we don't cover the Skrill North and the Skrill South comprehensively. And so we finally listened to what you want, and here's Michael McCann covering both the Skrill North and the Skrill South.
In the Skrill North, Hednesfield Town are the surprise early pace setters, with four wins and a draw, including a home win over Barrow on Saturday, powered by eight goals from Elliot Durrell. Durrell is the top scorer in the league, followed by Nathan Jarman, who has five for North Ferriby, having impressed in this division last year, scoring 15 goals as part of the Chester side who gained promotion. Altrincham held a 100% record until Saturday, when they drew 2-2 with Histon. They look a strong side this year, with a strike force of Damien Reeves and James Walshaw to the fore, currently claiming 4 and 3 goals respectively. Last year's beaten playoff finalist Brackley Town have shown no signs of a hangover, conceding just one goal, the best defence in the league, as part of an unbeaten start. At the other end of the table, it's been a surprise to many to see Stockport County on just 1 point from 5 games. Manager Ian Bogey is now gone, although this didn't appear to improve things as they lost 3-1 at Harrogate Town on Saturday. Gainsborough Trinity are the only pointless side in the league, whilst Oxford City make up the other relegation place. Many will be eagerly watching to see what appointments Stockport take to try and rescue their season and possibly give them an unlikely shout of getting back in the playoff hunt. Crowds have continued to be at over 3,000. Superb support for a club in such difficult times. In the Skrill South, Bromley are the early pace setters, winning 2-1 at home to Gosport and assisted by the 4 goals scored by their striker Pierre-Joseph Dubois. However, his tally has been topped by Danny Mills, who scored 5 for Whitehawks. Unfortunately, they've only been able to add 1 not scored by Mills, leaving them in trouble just outside the relegation zone with a solitary win. Dorchester and Gosport make up the relegation places, with both sides yet to win. Meanwhile, at the top of the table, Basingstoke have matched Bromley's record, with 4 wins and a loss thus far. beating Staines 2-1 on Saturday. Eastbourne were the table toppers, however they did not have the opportunity to keep their place at the top due to Farnborough being in administration and yet to play a game. Eastbourne stopper Craig Ross spoke to Out of the League about their start to the season, commenting, "It's a good start, but that's all it is at the minute. If we keep playing our football, we'll see where it takes us." When asked about the question of promotion within the group, Craig said that there'd be no talk of the P word just yet, but the manager had plenty of targets for the future. At the other end of the table, following budget cuts, David Holdsworth has found the going tough in his new job at Chelmsford City, who finished in the playoffs last year, yet have had a difficult start, gaining just 4 points from 4 games. That was your roundup of the current goings on in the Skrill North and Skrill South, with me, Michael McCann.
Thank you very much for listening to Out of the League. Make sure you tune in again next week, and why not follow us on Twitter so you can stay up to date with all your non-league news.